evening, and welcome to the March 2024 edition of Outbeat News in Depth. I'm Greg Moralia. In 1978, a group of gay men in San Francisco came together to form the very first gay men's chorus. Since then, choruses have emerged throughout the world, and it all started right here in San Francisco. The San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus has a wonderful history, and tonight we meet the not-so-new artistic director and conductor, Jake Stensberg. He took over the podium from Dr. Tim Sieglieg almost 2 years ago. Jake's an energetic and creative talent who's with us tonight to share his story and vision for the chorus. So stay with us. It's coming up next, right after your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, March 24th, 2024. This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for the week of March 24th, 2024. In Japan, marriage equality took a giant leap forward earlier this month when a high court ruled the country's ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. The court said, quote, "disallowing marriage to same-sex couples is a discrimination that lacks rationality." And they went on to say, quote, "enacting same-sex marriage does not cause disadvantages or harmful effects," end quote. Japan's civil code rules limiting marriage to couples of opposite sex, but the High Court in Sapporo ruled that these are unconstitutional and discriminatory. The justices wrote that existing law should be revised or rewritten to include other types of unions in addition to those between a man and a woman. The judiciary in Japan does not have the power to overturn existing civil marriage codes. Marriage equality has divided the country's court system in opposing rulings over the past several years. And while Japan's conservative government lags behind increasingly supportive public opinion, 70% of the Japanese public does support marriage equality, but it's opposed by the ruling Liberal Democratic Party of Prime Minister Fumio Kishida. And here in the U.S., a Kansas District Judge Teresa Watson ruled that it is legal for the state to deny transgender people the right to change their gender marker on a driver's license. Judge Watson's ruling upheld her July 2023 decision ordering the state of Kansas Department of Revenue to stop allowing changes on the sex label on driver's licenses. That decision was brought on by a lawsuit from the state's Attorney General Chris Kobach, who sued Governor Laura Kelly's administration for allowing transgender individuals to update their gender identity on licenses. The lawsuit came after passing of a bill, Senate Bill 180, also known as the Kansas Women's Bill of Rights. Kobach used this bill as justification to sue the Kelly administration for violating the law by continuing to allow transgender residents of the state to update their driver's licenses. The Women's Bill of Rights is a type of bill introduced in state legislatures across the country that comes from a model bill drafted by the Independent Women's Forum, the Independent Women's Law Center, and the Women's Liberation Front. The bill removed the legal recognition of transgender people from the state and instead focused on sex assigned at birth as a straight to legally recognize. The American Civil Liberties Union argued that the state constitution protected the right to change legal identification, citing a 2019 rule that defended abortion rights via an argument for bodily anatomy, as well as by citing the increased risk of harassment and discrimination that transgender individuals will face. Judge Watson, however, disagreed. Here in California, changes to gender markers have been allowed since January of 2019. Senate Bill 179 streamlined the process for Californians to change their gender marker and creates a non-binary gender category on California birth certificates, driver's licenses, identity cards, and gender change court orders. This allows transgender and gender non-binary people to select an X. And The Advocate reported that attempts at book censorship took a giant leap last year, with 4,240 titles targeted in schools and libraries nationwide. This represents a 65% increase over 2022. There were 1,247 demands to censor books, with many targeting multiple titles. The American Library Association identified several key trends in 2023 censorship efforts. Pressure groups focused on public libraries in addition to targeting school libraries. The number of titles targeted for censorship in public libraries increased by 92% from 2022. School libraries saw an 11% increase. Groups and individuals demanding the censorship of multiple titles, often dozens or hundreds at a time, drove the surge. Titles representing the voices and experiences of LGBTQ+ individuals and people of color accounted for 47% of those books targeted. There were also attempts to censure more than 100 titles in the states of Colorado, Connecticut, Florida, Idaho, Illinois, Iowa, Kentucky, Maryland, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, and Wisconsin. American Library Association President Emily Drabinsky said, quote, "Every challenge to a library book is an attack on our freedom to read." And she went on to say, "The books being targeted again focus on LGBTQ+ and people of color. Our communities and our country are stronger because of diversity," end quote. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moraglia. It was 1978. A group of gay men had just formed the very first Gay Men's Chorus, and their first performance came quite by surprise. It happened on the steps of San Francisco City Hall the day Supervisor Harvey Milk was murdered. And since that year, the chorus has been bringing the power of acceptance through music and song to places throughout our country, inspiring new choruses throughout the world to begin. My guest tonight is the artistic director and conductor, Jake Stensberg. Jake, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, super excited to have you on and to learn a little bit about you. You're not brand new to our community. We've seen you up in Sonoma County a couple of times. But for those people who are new to you, tell us about your background, what brought you into music and to the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus.
Absolutely, Greg. Thank you so much. I grew up in Wisconsin, rural Wisconsin. And my first introduction to music was really in the church. My grandma taught our Sunday school class. My mom was the piano player in Sunday school. My parents were in the church choir. And I had an ear for it at home because of that. But I really got into it because of some of the early movie musicals I was introduced to. Films like Beaches and Sister Act made me want to sing and get groups of people together. It really drew my interest to group singing over solo singing. Mm-hmm. And so it works really well with the concert we're doing now, which is all film music. But I spent most of my life in the Midwest. I spent 1 year getting to know myself in New York City, you know, kind of ran away from the Midwest for a little bit, and then returned to Indiana, where I went to graduate school at Butler, and I taught music at Purdue University for 4 years, and was really convinced that higher education was my dream and my destiny. And I did it for a while, and I think as everyone sort of does, I developed new dreams and new goals, and looked for jobs that really prioritized activism, really prioritized community building, because I thought these were strengths and secret powers of music that I wasn't getting to fully activate in my own life. And I found the job posting for the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, and it's what we're all about here. And so I read the description online one day and thought it was a perfect fit, and sat down and wrote my entire application and sent it in. And a year later, I was hired, and here we are.
Here you are. I have to ask you, though, growing up in a religious household, in a religious community, what was that like for you when you discovered who you were?
You know, it was not an easy thing to grapple with. The church I grew up in was not as accepting as we hope communities that teach love, they're not as accepting as we'd want that to be. And I was really, really fortunate to find a group of friends at school who were also in religious communities that were loving. And so eventually I sort of left the family church and was able to be surrounded by really amazing people and still pursue music in that way. It's not something I really do much anymore, but I was really fortunate to not sort of be stuck there. I was able to find a group of people that I felt really great to be around, and was able to celebrate me, and I could celebrate them in the same way.
Yeah, thank goodness, right? I'm a recovered Catholic, so and survived that. And I feel very fortunate, because every time I talk to someone who has had a bad experience or had to have any sense of sort of survival from that, I always feel grateful, because I never heard a negative word from the pulpit ever, mm-hmm. Which I think surprises folks sometimes. But I just think that's such a tragic struggle that a lot of gay people have with religion. But let's get back to the music.
Yes.
The San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, you know, the first. It has such an incredible history. And I teach LGBT studies, and when we talk about local history, the chorus is always part of what we talk about. But for our listeners who may not be familiar with where it came from, how it emerged, give us a little history lesson.
Sure. Oh, my goodness. First rehearsal, October 30th, 1978, in the days before John Reed Sims, our founder, postered the Castro, saying a gay men singing group was being formed. He had already just formed earlier that year the Gay and Lesbian Freedom Band. Mm-hmm. And he just had this dream that we call it now the Pride Parade. At the time, I think it was called the Gay Freedom Day Parade. Yeah. He just had a dream that that would have live music in it. He really wanted live music by gay artists in the Gay Freedom Day Parade. And so he made this band, he made this chorus. And at the time, no one could predict that just 5 weeks later, on November 27th, 1978, that Supervisor Dan White would assassinate Supervisor Harvey Milk and Mayor George Moscone. And so as the chorus was what I imagine they were preparing for maybe their first holiday show, their first concert ever, probably imagining they're going to have 10, 11, 12 weeks to prepare great music for eager audiences. And instead, 5 weeks into their very first rehearsal, 5 weeks into their existence, they gave the first performance of any gay chorus ever on the steps of City Hall for the candlelight vigil for Supervisor Milk and Mayor Moscone. And so that history is something that just, I get chills even now when I talk about it. I just, and we carry that very, very passionately and intently with us today. The way that we want to show up for our community, the way that we want to put activism at the forefront of our music making, the way that we use our voices to lift up the narratives that might be pushed down by others, that we have a platform and a voice that is loud and strong and beautiful, and we use it as often and everywhere that we can. So, that's the founding of the chorus. That was over 45 years ago. We just sang at the 45th anniversary candlelight vigil in the Castro. But the chorus has been fortunate to also be used in times of celebration. We just sang at the Castro Theater at the beginning of February for the 20th anniversary of same-sex marriage. And we sang the same song we sang on the steps of City Hall in 2004 when then Mayor Gavin Newsom signed into law same-sex marriage. And so it is highs, it is lows, but the common thread is that it's always in community. There's always a sense of togetherness, never alone in the chorus.
And that's what music does, doesn't it? It does bring people together. And that, you know, I'm going to go back to the inaugural performance after the murders of Milk and Moscone, because San Francisco was still reeling even 2 weeks before that with the news that had come out of Guyana, the Jonestown massacre. Unbelievable. And then this other unbelievable act. And then emerges this group that no one's ever imagined, a group of gay. How many people were involved at that point? Because the chorus is huge now, but how many people were in that initial chorus about?
First rehearsal, over 100 people showed up on October 30th. I don't know how many marched that night on November 27th, but I know we have record that over 100 people came to the first rehearsal.
Amazing. What are some of the other events? You talked about, obviously, a lot of joyous events, the marriage equality performances and anniversary. What are some of the other events that you learned about that really stood out to you and, you know, made you go, wow?
One of the biggest ever is in 1981. The chorus decided to do a national tour at a time when, 1981, many communities around the country were not perhaps as forward-thinking or accepting or at the same place San Francisco was, with large groups of gay men traveling and singing. And But following that 1981 tour, dozens of gay men's choruses formed. Many choruses have an anniversary of 1981 because of that tour. Now in North America, over 200 gala, we call them gala, gay and lesbian choruses, queer choruses for youth, for adults, exist in North America, and hundreds more globally. And it's all because of this 1981 tour that the San Francisco Women's Chorus embarked on, a tour that they were so passionate about that when there was one major venue that never paid out the box office receipts, and it was critical for paying for the members to travel. And so two or three members took out second mortgages on their home to fund this tour. I can't imagine being so visionary to know the weight of what you were doing in the moment. Often we can look back and see the gravity of a situation, but to know in that moment that this was the most important work they might ever do in their lives, and that it was worth their own personal investment of that greatness, that they made it happen. So that's a moment that sticks with me forever. And touring has more history in the chorus. I'm sure you know, in 2017, the chorus went on what we call the Lavender Pen Tour, where they traveled to the five states in the South with the most oppressive LGBTQ plus legislation to bring love and light and hope to these communities.
Yeah. Sounds like we need another tour with everything that's going on in this country right now.
Well, Greg, have I got news for you?
Let's come back to that. Hold that out. Let's keep them in suspense. The chorus started out in a pretty small space, and one of the stories we covered, I don't know, a year or so, maybe it's been longer than a year, was your move into this beautiful new space. Yes. So what, you know, little office right off of Castro Street, tell us about the space you're in now.
We are in a really, really beautiful 1930s Art Deco, four-story, 23,000 square foot building. We recently renovated the first floor. The building was, I think, built before the American with Disabilities Act, so it was not ADA accessible at all. The whole first floor, including the stage, is ADA accessible. All new audiovisual equipment. The chorus rehearses there every Monday night, and the sound quality is what you dream of a space sounding like when you gather to sing. We are so, so fortunate to be able to have that be our home and to open our doors to the community so that it can be a home for San Francisco, for queer artists around the nation, for groups that travel, for groups here who don't have their own space and are looking for a place to rehearse, to incubate their new works. We are so, so lucky to be able to welcome them as well.
How did that come about? I mean, property in the city isn't exactly cheap and plentiful.
That's a great question. So the chorus rehearsed at this building prior to purchasing it. It was formerly owned by the Baha'i Faith Center. Before that, by the U.S. Foresters. We're only the third tenant of the building in its almost 100-year history. And the chorus went on tour in 2017 in the South. This is when the leadership of the chorus and some of our great supporters who were on that tour as well started talking about what would it look like to have a permanent home. And then it was weeks later that the Baha'i Faith Center was interested in selling, and they absolutely could have sold it much, much more to developers or something along that line. But they called the chorus and said, it's important to us that it remains a community space, and we trust you. We entrust you with this community space that we've been blessed to have for so long. And the chorus said, yes, we should do this. And so in 2019, that process was started, and it was a great transition. They were very, very generous to us. And I think it was, again, visionary of them to see it as a community space when it could have gone in a lot of directions.
Yeah, sounds incredible. Well, you know, just like our community has evolved with all of its various identities and all of its different colors, you know, I notice as I go to see chorus performances, the demographics and the membership in the chorus is really evolving as well. It's not just a gay men's chorus anymore. Talk about that.
That's very, very true. While we call ourselves the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, we are affirming of all gender identities and expressions. just before I arrived, I came around 18 months ago, maybe a little bit more, the chorus voted on their bylaws, which formerly stated you must identify as a man to be in this chorus. And already at that time, there were singers who did not fit that mold. And so it was really, really a way to create an accepting and a welcoming and an inclusive space where people felt belonging, that mm-hmm. they didn't have to fit in. They could just belong as their authentic selves. And so now we have trans women, we have non-binary singers, we have, yeah, you're right, that membership has grown in the most beautiful way. And it's, I think it's really exciting that you can tell just by coming and watching and seeing what's happening on stage, that that growth is evident and so wonderful to see.
So how's the culture of the chorus reacted? I just know in my own generation, sometimes we're a little slow to accept change. You've got such, and there is a vast age range there too, right? There are some folks that we would call old timers, senior members, if you will, and then there's a lot of young people. How's that culture shifted?
You know, this is an ongoing topic that we discuss as often as we can with our whole membership. We have, I think, four generations from Gen Z, Millennial, Gen X, and Baby Boomers in the chorus. And we often talk about how, depending where you grow up, who you grew up around, when you grew up, just the language we use, the terminology we have to describe ourselves and each other is so different.
Yep.
And I wish I could say that change is easy and everyone is on the same page every moment of every day, but that would just not, you know, it's just not true. That's not the way change works. Change happens slow. We often talk about moving at the speed of trust. And so creating ways for people to learn why members from an earlier generation have the words they use and what did they mean then? And what words do we have now and where do they come from and what do they mean to us? So that we can sort of develop a shared understanding of each other's backgrounds, each other's experiences, and not ever with the intention of suppressing or oppressing anyone's background or experience, mm-hmm. but with the hope of understanding that the more we know about each other, the more we get to love each other. And so it is a slow and difficult and a slow and difficult process that is matched with outcomes. The work is worth it, is what I'm trying to say. It is hard and difficult work that is incredibly worth it to do.
Awesome. And so what is the total membership of the chorus now? If you got everybody in one room, how many people are there?
297.
Wow.
297. Yeah, it's a large group. but that comes with, you know, we have great opportunities ahead of us. When you have 297 willing volunteers with a shared goal of compassion, community, and activism, what can't we do? Is exactly. Kind of the way out of
that. Yeah, yeah. And I know in past shows, I remember when Tim Selig was on, he would talk about, hey, we're doing auditions. Come on down. So tell us about what that process is.
Sure. I know auditions are scary. I had to audition for this job. It was nerve-wracking. And so I do my very best to make the process have as few barriers as possible. So Gary, if you wanted to audition for the chorus, you pick your own song. I'm not going to tell you what song you have to sing. I'm not going to test, you know, if you've studied music at an academic level. I just want to hear you sing a song that you love singing. We'll provide a piano player. If you've never sung with the piano before, you can bring a recording and sing along to a recording. It's less than 5 minutes. I'll ask you a couple questions, maybe about why do you want to join the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus? And that's really it. We make it as non-threatening as possible.
So what kind of talent are you looking for? I mean, do you want professional singers, people who have experience singing, or are you looking for folks that perform in the shower?
We are welcoming of all, you know, I believe everyone can sing. Maybe some people need a little more help or a little more coaching, but everyone has a voice. Everyone has a voice. And with a little help, I think I can really help people fall in love with their voices. I think I can really guide people to that place. Not everyone in the chorus is a soloist. You know, we had solo auditions for the current concert we're working on, and one song had 37 people audition for it. And I only can only pick one in the end. And so not everyone in the chorus is a soloist. Not everyone is a perfect singer. We have singers in their 50s and 60s and 70s who walk in and say, I haven't sang since high school and I really want to again. We have singers that walk in and say, I've never sang before, but I just came out to my wife and kids and I need a gay community. I need a queer community. I need to be around people who will see me and love me without any qualifications, that they'll just accept me. And maybe they're not a great singer, but if I think that I see the need for that community, and so, you know, it's okay if you're not perfect. It's okay if you haven't sang before. But if you're like a professional singer looking for a little fun on the side, we'll take that too. But, you know, it's really a spectrum of backgrounds that we have in the chorus.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great opportunity for people. I am not a singer. I can only tell you that I've done some karaoke stuff. And okay. My husband and I did a karaoke performance at the Mint there on Market Street one night.
Yes.
Fully expecting to hear Elton John's Rocket Man with him singing with us, because that would cover us up. But of course, they don't do that. They just play it. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a little eye-opening.
Great song choice, by the way. Great song choice.
Oh, yeah. That's love our, it. That's our song. So I've noticed at the holiday concert, which if our listeners have not been to, it's an annual event that that the chorus has been doing as a benefit for Face to Face here every year for how many years now? Like a lot.
Face to Face, decades, I believe, with Face to Face.
It's a blast. And then, of course, the Green Center is an incredible space to go to.
Best venue in the Bay Area that we go. It's so, so beautiful. It's visually stunning. The audio yeah. experience is amazing as an audience member in there. It's really, really great.
And the seats are pretty comfortable too for audience members. But you've brought some new things in the last two concerts since you've taken over. Talk about some of the changes that you've made, some of the things that you're kind of excited about.
Yeah, you know, there are two that really jump out in my mind, and I think they represent what I love most about the job. And it's that I love supporting new artists, new composers, generating new works and breathing life into music that's never been heard before. I also love a bit of pizzazz, a bit of flash, a bit of production. So on the first end, the first thing I did, I think, when I started working here is create a composition competition, really focused on new holiday music for chorus. And so now in April, we publicize this competition. Composers submit their music. I enlist a panel of three judges that look at this music blindly, so they don't know the composer or the age of the composer or where they live. Mm-hmm. They score it. I compile the scores. The winner gets $2,000. We fly them in, we give them tickets for them and their family, we put them up in a hotel, and it's a really great chance to just uplift new music. Sometimes doing, you know, 46 holiday shows now with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Wow. To create something new every time takes a bit of work. And so I thought this is a great way to keep something fresh while embracing our mission of supporting artists and producing new music.
Mm-hmm.
On the completely other opposite side of that, in pizzazz and sparkle, I have this obsession with kind of taking pop divas and then just changing everything about their music. So 2 years ago, we did this full like 8-minute medley of Cher songs, but with a Christmas spin. And mm-hmm. so, you know, Believe was, do you believe in Santa Claus instead of do you believe in life after love? This year we did Britney Spears. and it's like this 8-minute, just amazing thing. We have drag queens that come out as these divas. We reenact, you know, like Rudolph. experiencing his strength and power after being embarrassed and ashamed of himself for having a red nose. I love the storytelling. I love the comedy of it. I love the music. It's really just a chance for me to do more Britney, more Cher, more pop divas in holiday concerts. Yeah. And so
it's really fun.
We'll do that, both of those things, every single year. A pop diva medley with parody lyrics and a brand new world premiere of a commissioned work by a composer.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's really fun about the concert as a whole, is that you bring a mix of very spiritual, you know, sort of serious performance, and then some just really crazy fun stuff, some shenanigans, if we will. But I also noticed
I'm glad you enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a good mix. But I also noticed you're featuring a lot of smaller groups, you know, some quartets and whatever, where folks come out and so talk about that a little bit. Is that their own creation? Is that something that you've put together for them?
Let's see. So we have two small groups in the chorus, the Lollipop Guild, mm-hmm. and that sings kind of show choir-ish music, a lot of pop show Broadway. And then we have the Homophonics, which sings a cappella music, like Straight Note Chaser or Pentatonics. They sing in that style. They're so, so talented. And usually they get to maybe sing one song per concert. So now I'm trying to make sure that they have some more performance opportunities. And that's not just great for them. I think it's great for our audience members who get to come and see these incredibly talented singers who put in extra hours every single week to prepare to be able to perform. And then in terms of concerts, when we have duets or trios or quartets, the chorus is just so talented. And it's a great honor to be able to put that talent on stages all around the Bay Area. For example, at the holidays, for 14 or 15,000 audience members. I mean, it's just a real pleasure and privilege to be able to highlight the beauty and skill and creativity and innovation of our community in front of so many every December.
I know one of my colleagues that I teach with, their family tradition is Christmas Eve at the Castro Theater. Hasn't missed it. With the Castro Theater, you know, sort of being reimagined and recreated, do you think that's going to continue?
It will 100% continue. We have had a great relationship with Another Planet Entertainment, who is now beginning the restoration process of that gorgeous, gorgeous space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've been singing there for 34 years. Yeah. I think 1990, Dr. Stan Hill, former director of the chorus. You know, at the time, singers were either too sick to travel their families just didn't want them to. And so he created a home for these people. So it is something that we will always continue to do. Just for this upcoming year, we will sing somewhere else on Christmas Eve and just move the party to another home. But as soon as we can get back to the Castro Theater, we cannot wait to welcome our community and really our families, our chosen families, back to spend December the 24th with us year after year after year.
Yeah, it's pretty magical. But you do a whole lot more than Christmas. We've talked a lot about that so far. So tell us about some of the upcoming concerts that are planned for this year.
It'd be my great pleasure to. Our next concert is coming up very soon, March 28th at 7:30 p.m., Davies Symphony Hall, titled Drag Me to the Movies. So this is film music, your favorite songs featured in movies with drag queens. We have a guest artist, Lady Camden, who is just hilarious, one of the most talented dancers I've seen, always turning out amazing looks, joining us that night, as well as drag queens from the chorus. That'll feature things like Sister Act. We have a whole Bette Midler medley. We have This Is Me from The Greatest Showman. Songs that empower us to be ourselves, but also things you'll be laughing. There's a couple songs that I think might put a tear in your eye. And by the end, my goal in concerts is always to create a transformative experience where you arrive one way and leave another. Mm-hmm. And I think the dramatic power of narrative has that ability to transform us in the span of 90 minutes or 2 hours in a one-night concert. And so I'm so, so proud of that. The chorus is singing the music so incredibly. Rehearsals have been such a joy because people are loving the music and the arc that the concert takes them on as they get to perform it. And I am confident that will transfer to the audience. So I cannot wait for that show. Davie Symphony Hall, March 28th. And after that, our next big concert is June 18th. 7:30 p.m. again, also at Davie Symphony Hall, this one with some of our favorite collaborators in the city, the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. That concert is my take on love songs, which sounds kind of generic. You might think that you can predict all the songs that will be in a classic love songs concert, but I'm trying to explore the idea of love songs outside of romantic love. So that could be familial love, love that is fierce and protective of the most marginalized among us, love that memorializes our ancestors and the work that of those who came before us, love of the earth, and why does that matter to us today? So it's really like an expansive view of love songs with the San Francisco Symphony. That one features a brand new commission that we'll be giving the world premiere of. That will also feature a guest artist, Enrico Lagasca, a really incredible bass baritone out of New York City that will be singing some classical music with us. And so both concerts, Davie Symphony Hall, movies, love, with the goal, with a specific goal in mind of putting more love stories in our daily life. It's far too difficult, Greg, I think, to find stories about love, and far, far too easy to find stories about division, hate, conflict, and controversy.
Yeah.
And so as I was mapping the whole season out from the holiday to the summer, my only goal was to try and send people out of the auditorium with love stories that they can tell each other. And so I think both of these concerts do that spectacularly. So, so proud to present them to our community.
And what a great venue. I mean, you can't beat Davie's.
So, so beautiful. So beautiful. From the moment you walk in to sitting and hearing, the chorus loves singing there. It's a really wonderful venue in the city.
Sounds like a perfect evening out.
I think so. Yeah. I hope to see you there. Let me know if you'd like to come.
Well, we're going to get some links up so folks can get tickets. So let's talk about that real quick. If someone wanted to get tickets for either of these concerts, where would they go?
Always our website, sfgmc.org. And the process to buy tickets and picking your own tickets is super easy. And especially for the March concert, as soon as you hear this, hop on and buy tickets because they're going to go very, very quickly. June will also go quickly, but a little more time with that one.
Yeah.
But sfgmc.org for all of your ticket purchasing needs.
Perfect. And if you missed that website, we'll put a link on our website at outbeatnews.com. Just go to the top of the page and click on show notes. So, you talked about a tour, or at least a surprise that you were going to share with us today. So tell us.
I'd be so, so happy to. You know, as I have watched and experienced the emotional recoil of watching so many anti-trans bills show up around the country, especially targeting children, I just thought that the chorus needs to go to there. Instead of hiding and staying away, we need to go. And so the chorus this summer will travel to Iowa and Nebraska and Minnesota.
Wow.
From July 6th to July 14th. And the secret is, Greg, that there is incredible work happening in these communities. There are strong activists lifting their communities up and protecting their kids and each other. And my goal is to just lift up their voices, to just bring a little extra love power and light power, to say, thank you for the work you're doing. We want to sing songs for you and hopefully lighten the load for a day. And so we'll partner with other gay choruses in Des Moines, Iowa City, and Omaha, Nebraska. And after that tour, we'll travel to Minnesota in Minneapolis with over 7,000 other queer chorus singers for a quadrillennial every 4-year festival that now hasn't happened since 2016 because of the pandemic.
That's right.
And spend 5 days in Minneapolis getting to support choruses from all around the world. Actually, it's a global conference. And so we'll start just by ourselves, partnering with local choruses in Iowa and Nebraska, and then bus up to Minneapolis for the rest of the week to enjoy the work of singers from all around the world.
Because it all started in San Francisco in 1978. Amazing.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something?
It really is. It really is. It's a fantastic part of our history. And as I tell my LGBT students, so much of our history started right in San Francisco. It's remarkable.
It's so true.
All right. So you've got some time under your belt with this group. You came from Wisconsin all the way out to San Francisco, which must have seemed like a completely different world to you. What are you liking best so far?
Oh, I love my favorite part about the chorus. I have two things that I love, two things that make me want to wake up earlier and work harder. One is hearing singers audition and say they're not totally confident in their voice. They're nervous. They don't know if they're good. To watch them go from that to their first solo audition, that moment when I'm able to see they have grown, they love their voice, they feel confident, they're ready to share. Watching that growth as a singer fills my heart so, so much. I also have a great privilege of watching them grow as people, not just musicians, to watch singers come in who, right now we have a lot of singers who audition who moved during the pandemic for work, work remotely, and haven't made any friends since moving here 4 years ago. And so to welcome them into the chorus and then within weeks, see them talking in a group of 10 or 20 people before or after rehearsal, or see them post pictures of being out with their chorus friends, watching the chorus serve that need as well. It's so much more than music. The work we do is so much more than music. Watching that growth, that community, that sense of belonging blossom inside an individual is one of the greatest joys that I may ever experience. And if it is the greatest, it will have been more than enough. It has that feeling of purpose and fulfillment that I've always searched for and have been so lucky to find here.
Well, I hear the teacher in you coming out there. Right?
Once a teacher, always a teacher.
Of course. And I think that's a wonderful thing that you bring to this group.
Thank you.
Because you recognize those other pieces of belonging, you know, that people get out of. It's not just about the singing. It's about the community that comes from it, the connection, the growth. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's great that you brought that up because it reminds me of maybe the other third thing, not ranked in order, of course, but I also am a student now that I am in San Francisco. There is so much to learn about San Francisco history and LGBTQ plus history that was left out of my Christian school, elementary school history classes. And to walk into a room and have, you know, 150 plus LGBTQ plus mentors who are 55 and over is something that I wish I could help everyone experience. To learn from those who came before us is a lifelong journey, something I hope I do forever and ever. And to be able to do that here, where, as you said, so much history was made, to learn from the people that actually did it is a great privilege. So I love being a teacher, but I also love being a lifelong student.
That's awesome. Well, your last question probably is going to sound like maybe something that came from your job interview. And that is, you know, what's your vision for the chorus?
Oh, you know, the founders of the chorus, John Reed Sims, all the way through the artistic direction of Dr. Tim Selig, who is here for 10 and a half years, were true visionaries and set out a path of community building, of fostering compassion at home and around the world, and inspiring activism. And I think that we have the opportunity to double down on that now that we also own a building. And so creating the opportunity for, one, the membership to explore their creativity and their passion and their own self-expression, especially as we expand what the chorus can be, is a really beautiful opportunity, but also to create opportunities for the audience to do things we've already talked about, like experience new music or experience the escapism of outrageous, fabulous, extravagant pop diva medleys, or to learn the history from our queer elders. You know, we're creating all of these opportunities now more than we ever have before at the building. And the more we can just double down on the reason, the chorus, I call it our higher purpose. You know, the more we can double down and invest in that, the more we'll be closer to achieving what I think our founders envisioned.
Brilliant. Where can people go to follow you?
We are on all of the platforms, Greg. San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus is on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You might have seen our recent viral Britney video with over 14 million views on Instagram. I can't imagine. That's global reach. You know, that's like inspiring joy and hopefully smiles around the world this past December. Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, TikTok. We also publish blog articles on our websites about, you know, gay musical artists, or right now we're doing some posts on Black History Month. And so all over you can find the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus.
Great. And again, we'll put some of those links on our own website at outbeatnews.com. Click on show notes at the top of the page and follow this amazing group. So Jake, you brought some music for us, a little sampling from a rehearsal. Tell us what we're going to hear.
Yes, this is a rehearsal as we were preparing for our soon forthcoming concert on March 28th, Drag Me to the Movies. Act two of the concert starts with a huge Moulin Rouge medley. And that medley ends with one of the like emotional pinnacles of the film, Come What May. So this is us rehearsing Come What May from Moulin Rouge for our upcoming March 28th concert, Drag Me to the Movies.
I will love you until my heart. to waste in all and all around you. And there's no mountain too high, no river too wide. Sing out this song and I'll be there.
Been listening to the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus in one of their rehearsals, rehearsing Come What May for their upcoming performance. We've been talking with Jake Stensberg, who's the artistic director and conductor of the always amazing San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Jake, it's been a pleasure getting to know you. We're so fortunate to have you here. Thank you.
The pleasure is mine, Greg. Thank you so much.
And if you'd like to learn more about the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, how you can set up an audition, get tickets to one of their performances, or even make a donation, just go to their website at sfgmc.org. Well, that wraps up our hour for this month. Be sure to tune in next week for an Outbeat Extra with Gary Carnevale. That's at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB Radio. In the meantime, have a fantastic week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us. Outbeat News in Depth is hosted and produced by Greg Moralia. Our shows are available for on-demand play anytime on our website at outbeatnews.com and on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and now on iHeartRadio. Find links to subscribe at outbeatnews.com.
I love to change the world, but I don't know what to. So I give it up to you.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter. But I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains. We gon' walk it out and move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I do it a thousand times. The silence is quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move, I won't dance, bring it to its feet. For that we have each other. I will rise a thousand times again, and we'll rise up. I like the waves. We'll rise up in spite of the ache. We'll rise up, and we'll do it a thousand times again. We gon' walk it out and move on days. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like
support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCB-FM Roanoke Park and KRCG-FM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Beale Street Caravan is next.